snack. And we're back with another episode of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. My name is Zach Work, and hanging out in the garage, my best friend
Chet Higgins. That was a lot of energy.
brought the energy. We talked about in the last episode. You know, you got to bring the energy. You got to get ready for the room, and bam, we're there. We're there. But that's really all I had, man. So, what do you want to talk about?
So, before these episodes, one of the things, and we talked through...
There's like a little life that happens between...
Well, we talked through like what's the actual beneficial stuff we want to gather. But then we always like our beginning part to be a little bit banter. So it's always like, oh, what do we want our banter to be? And then we don't get into it much.
Which we've been told by some is actually their favorite part of the episode.
It's all I listen to. I may get choked up.
Like teary-eyed?
First of all, I want to thank you guys for being here with us all of these years. This may or may not be our last episode, okay? Because right after this episode...
We're on a crunch.
Zach and I are going to do something very dangerous. And for Zach, this is commonplace, happens all the time. But this will be the first time.
Saturday, yeah.
This will be the first time I've ever bought anything off of Facebook Marketplace. And we are going to meet a stranger who may or may not kill us both.
He's not going to kill.
What do you think? So there'll probably be an article in the Baptist Press, though, right?
Right.
Zach and Chad killed.
Beloved youth ministry figures murdered at Quick Trip over pellets.
It's a Casey's General Store.
Casey's General Store over pellet smoker.
Buying a pellet smoker.
You are. I mean, there's probably some folks that are judging you as much about buying a secondhand pellet smoker as they are judging you.
I'm buying one of those big vertical ones.
The vertical ones are fun. They're fun. No, you make it like a big deal. Like, I don't even, man, I've done this dozens of times. Like, I love Facebook Marketplace. I love meeting a random person who's trying to unload their junk. Like, there's a story there. It's a coat that her ex-boyfriend no longer wears.
You're buying clothing?
Yeah, I
mean, in the midst of a divorce?
I mean, listen, she's you know, cleaning out closets, you know, my boys have Switch games that were purchased because some other parent said, you know, this causes too much distraction in their home. And I'm like, well, we've got really good guardrails. So I'd love to have it. Yeah. Yeah. I drove to Arkansas. Okay. True story. I drove to Arkansas last weekend to get a new couch for upstairs. Young lady in Arkansas for her family had bought a really nice couch, didn't like it, and was selling it at like 40% off what it was new, and there wasn't a blemish on it. And so that was how I spent my Saturday.
I like that you've decided that your parenting skills
are strong enough. Yep. Strong enough to handle it. Yeah. For your family, Pokemon may have been bad, but for our family, Pokemon Shield, we're here for it. Right. Two copies. Yeah. Yes,
amazing.
What a mess.
Well,
you really nervous? You're nervous about this?
I don't think so. But
also a little bit, maybe.
I'm less worried of physical violence and more worried of, wow, this pellet smoker didn't work. And
now that's
they won't take it back, so I'm going to unload it on this guy.
Yeah, that is the reality, especially for stuff that like is electronic. Like, how do you try it? How do you know? Could you have him send you a video of it turning on? Like, these are...
Because I can't fire up pellet smoker.
The people at Casey's are nice folks. We probably could go around back and plug it in, see if that old auger starts spinning. I mean, not wrong.
Well, I'm gonna take a chance.
I'll bring a bag of pellets. We'll find
our next episode may be me trying to sell a pellet smoker for.
if you're interested in vertical, wow, $700 off. That's a savings. It's a pretty good savings. I think sympathetic to that, the feeling of unsureness or unpreparedness is where we're going to land today. Because this is part two. So if you didn't catch part one in the last episode, previous episode, we were talking about getting ready or handling disciplinary things as you're teaching or preaching from stage. One of the things that's related to that is the culture and preparedness of your small group leaders. And if there's any group of people I know that are hesitant to like, I they get it, but also like, it is a big thing to be the like leader, co-leader in a room full of like teenagers, because that's just, even if you're a parent that has multiple kids, it's different when you've got a couple teenagers in your house versus 11 teenagers all in one room. That for some folks is like a little bit, that's like nightmare fuel of like, oh my gosh, I woke up and I had to give this speech. And so I think one of the things that we can do, because you as a youth minister are probably not worried about it, you could pick up and run into any small group and help kind of do, is how do we leverage that for our leaders in a way that's duplicatable and repeatable so that they don't clinch with fear, or do some of the things we talked about last week, try to correct all these behaviors as they're happening. I think, I think a lot of small group leaders that are reluctant or hesitant to sign on for more years have had a real rough go of small group stuff. Like they just, the group didn't gel, or there was like troublemakers that they didn't know how to deal with. And I think if you're looking for longevity and retention of your leaders, preparing them really well in small group environments, not with content, but with tools, is really important.
The first thing that I would really recommend in this process is to partner new leaders with experienced leaders.
Like Padawan style, like a mentor apprentice.
Yeah, specifically in those middle school years. And if you don't have at least like someone in your church that has some like outside, like a teacher, a principal, a coach or something to bring in, like go after that person until they say yes. Okay. Yeah.
And I'll give you summers off. Please, please help. please, please teach your Karen. Please help.
Yeah. And so try to incorporate them into your ministry, but you'll also over time get some leaders with some experience that enjoy it and that want to stick around and building a system to where others can learn from them.
Yeah.
To sit underneath them for at least a semester and help them not only just have the expectations or the, you know, twice a year or even once a month trainings, but that ongoing, they're seeing it firsthand can be so, so helpful.
Well, and I think, again, youth ministry, maybe for many of you, you've been doing it for years. And so you just... We've talked about this before in the podcast, like youth ministry is difficult because the kids are always changing. Some of what youth ministry is the same thing. It's just the group of people you're ministering to is changing. And so you're less afraid because you've seen this play out. You know some of the typing that happens with certain students coming from certain situations or certain behaviors that are tied to, you know, you get that. But if you don't do it a lot, it can be like, oh my gosh, am I messing up? What should I be doing? And I think, again, this is where you should always be as helpful as you can delivering, you know, the small group material or content or curriculum to them early. But this is the renewed emphasis to have real training meetings for leaders and maybe even specialized trainings for small group leaders that other folks, you know, chaperones, security, cooks, camp staff may not have, because it is both a skill and an art form.
Yep.
And so it's a skill and that they can practice and get better. And it's an art form that when they're around somebody who's really good, they can appreciate what it looks like to be in the room that way.
I also think there's an element to it that they're not just thrown into the fire.
Yes.
Because
the audition, the watching, the trial period, trial run.
the reality of a lot of this specifically, and the one that I'll always kind of pick on, because at least my experience, it is where I've had the most conversations with leaders that are like, this is chaos. I don't know if I can do it, is middle school boys.
Yeah.
Even all the way up to ninth grade boys.
Yeah.
Some of the other grades, their issues seem to be more of like, it's hard to get them to talk.
Right.
Where middle school boys, it's like, they won't stay on topic.
Right. They're literally hanging from the rafters.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I would really encourage, and we talked last episode about setting the expectation for the students. I think it's important that we set the expectation for our volunteer leaders
Oh, good.
And for ourselves.
Yeah.
that they understand what success looks like in this middle school boys small group.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times when you recruit adults, we forget what it's like to be 11.
Yeah.
And we start to try to create an environment and atmosphere that we ourselves would enjoy now.
Right, right.
And so
it's a group for us, not a group for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's a very different kind of group for attention spans,
right.
Focus, the questions that we ask, the conversations that are sustained.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a lot of times we give them curriculum.
Yeah.
That has an hour long conversation on it.
Right. It's 9 questions that will take you 50 minutes.
Yeah. And over again, without good training, you're going to hear from your leaders, well, we weren't able to get through all the questions.
Or we had to rush through them.
Yeah.
Because for them, the expectation was you gave them 9 questions, they needed 9 answers, and that's how they know when they're done.
Right.
But that's not always true.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think setting up the expectation for that leader of saying, hey, we've got some curriculum for you, and realize that you are not trying to have one good small group. You're trying to build a good group that cares for each other, loves each other, and helps each other grow. If you look at any good, I'll take even elementary age school stuff.
They're the best, by the way.
Right. Yeah. There's a period of time before they begin to learn that they're just laying out expectations, developing routine, building relationship. And I don't think enough of that is done in student ministry at those middle school age appropriate.
Yes. Yeah.
To where it's like, we just start small group.
Yeah.
And from go, it's here are your 9 questions. And for a lot of leaders, they're trying to just get through the 9 questions. And the middle school boards are all over the place. They know each other, may not know the leader. All of these kind of dynamics happen.
Daniel will answer.
Correct.
Right. Bless you, Daniel. You're one of the good ones. You're the realist. Yeah, but stop answering for your friends. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and everybody else is either not paying attention or messing around and all that.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to incorporate the fun element into those group spaces. Let your leaders know, like, hey, in these first few months, we're just trying to build relationship, get to know these students, make it fun, incorporate like the play element into the conversation element that can be really helpful.
Well, that's so what you shared, I think, is important to hear, even as we prepare leaders, because sometimes we can feel like a teaching or a preaching is performance, right? Like I gave a really good talk. There is no small group grading of like, yeah, tonight may have gone well or gone rough, but groups that meet regularly, weekly, every other week, whatever, you're grading on the curve of when they meet together because you're hoping to form a bond, a group, a community. And so knowing that, man, like this week, they were wound up because this happened and we just kind of played and it was silly is okay as long as you've helped the leader know that it was okay. I think, again, to stress the expectations of what you want them to do, but then giving them the parameters of what success looks like under those expectations. Like, in middle school boys, like, you aren't going to have a extended deep conversation, but if you had one great, if everybody shared one real true thing about themselves, that might be enough. And it may be funny true, or it may be serious true, but it was true. And I think some of the things that we've got to help our leaders see is that this is a longer run, a bigger curve. It's not each week, it's week over week. And so some of that is giving them the authority to kind of shape and nurture the group. Like it should feel different when you're in Craig's group versus Tim's group because Craig and Tim are different. And so we're having small groups, but these are also like mini ministries that have a little bit of life and character on their own. Like the way that Tim leads middle school boys may be, hey, between each question, we're going to play around a ninja, or, you know, we're going to throw, whoever has the ball gets to talk and we throw the ball around. And so not everybody's going to do that, but Coach Tim, that he's always got a lacrosse ball. That's what we do. We toss it around. It's just the thing. And so I think having some character and personality, because that's when small groups feel real, is it feels connective. And so if it's just a stock, like we sit in a circle and we ask that question, it may be appropriate for students to stand and share because that helps keep their focus. Or some of your groups, it may be lounge time where people get to sit, you know, more free than just sitting in metal chairs in a circle. Mm-hmm. Some of that may have to explore the space a little bit. Right. So I think, again, each group needs to develop its own character. So expectations of what I need to do, success, when is it good? But then what is the character or the shape of the group get to look like?
I had one of the best female small group leaders ever in one of the churches I worked with. She did my sixth grade girls.
Yeah.
And her room was specifically set up with a big table in the middle and more art supplies than you've ever seen in your life.
Just Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby. And her girls, all through the year, they were making a journal.
Okay.
Okay. And so every week it was this collage of art. But that's how she incorporated her questions into it. Mm. And so, like, they were reflecting in that journal. And so the end of the semester, they took those home.
So it was beautiful.
It was beautiful, but she also equipped them along the way of how to incorporate that in their, like, spiritual life. And, dude, it was so good.
Yeah.
But those girls really tuned into that every week.
Yeah.
Because that's the way that they engaged. I also had one of my guys, middle school small group leaders. What's that? Is it jackpot where you take the, like, they all clump up and then you have one dude
throw the ball. Yeah. 500 jackpot, whatever.
They would always begin playing that.
Yeah.
And he would, it wasn't the full small group lesson, but you would watch him. At first, it was just the game.
Yeah.
And then while they were playing game, he would start incorporating like little questions.
Moments. Yeah.
So like the kid that would finally get it was coming up to take over. And Bobby was like asking him a question like, hey, like, tell me something great that happened this week for you.
Yeah.
And so it was getting these kids talking, engaging while they're not thinking about what everybody else is thinking about them in the moment, which is a big deal for middle school kids, of being vulnerable. And so he started that process, and then they would go straight into lesson as they're walking back into their room. Mm. So good.
Well, so this is some of the things that are non-question stuff. So we talked about expectations, success, character. I think rhythms or practices are really important. Stuff that's not question-based, like for that group playing the jackpot thing or having the journal thing, it's the character of the group, but it's also a spiritual practice that isn't just ask a question, give an answer. I love deeply the formation of stuff around small groups. I am nervous that we have pinned it all to discussion because we've said that faith-based things are just our ability to like thought and respond when so much more of it relates to service and caring and kindness and compassion. Like, there's just so much more than like, did you hear and understand? Mm. It's not a verbal exam, right? Like you may mess up all the references on the scripture and look a lot more like Jesus than the kid that's like winning the Bible Bowl whatever.
That is such a good statement. It is not a verbal exam. And I think that for a lot of our adults and even us, like you can think like, we got to give them these questions and we got to get these answers. Like, what are you hoping your small groups do?
Yeah.
Build relationships so you can speak into the lives of these students and begin to see discipleship happen. And I think sometimes like we think of church and these places as this like schoolroom classroom.
Right.
Instead of a place to like come, be encouraged, be strengthened, that we would live our life like Jesus.
Right.
Sometimes I think it becomes the gym model instead of the like community model.
Yeah. We do this here and only here.
Yeah.
No, man, it's not, we're not doing reps to lift weights that only are useful there. We're trying to get stronger as we go about our lives. And so, yeah, I mean, I want students to be able to think through what they've heard and what they've read in scripture. I want us to be in the word, but man, sometimes just reading the word right. is what the word needed to be to get right. into you more than your commentary.
Right.
Especially for your leaders, take the pressure off of, if you're teaching, they don't have to like perform a long monologue of teaching. We're trying to reinforce, we're trying to care, and we're trying to ask, I mean, so you share two of your leaders. I've shared this before at other conference moments. One of the most impactful small group leaders was the least best teacher that I had growing up, but he was faithful every week to write down our prayer request. And I believe in my heart, pray for him. But also as a group of high school guys, we would keep coming back to those prayer requests. It was like the most like, it was like steadying that if they were on the whiteboard, they were there week over week until we felt like we had heard from God about it. From everything from like a test or a team or a girl or a home situation. Like if it was like, man, do we feel like we have heard from God on this? Yeah. We leave it up there. Yeah. And there was something about that, that man, that there was no nine questions. I mean, he we probably did the curriculum that he was given. I don't remember any of it, but I remember that. And I know those boys will remember the jackpot game because that right. when the ball's coming, you're like, oh, if I catch it, I got to answer. Yeah. And those young ladies that have those journals will probably treasure those for a long time. And that seems a lot better as a small group than like, hey, did we get through the questions? Right. I mean, have questions because questions create opportunities to share and do. But man, I am not convinced like I used to be that really deep questions do the discipleship work they that don't. We want them to. Yeah.
I think they become like indicators and they're an opportunity to talk and learn things. But I think most youth pastors, if they look back at their own discipleship, we, like you talked about, we often don't remember the like topic of the big conversations.
Rarely, very rarely.
We can remember, oh, there were good conversations.
Yeah.
But a lot of times
we stayed up late at camp talking about some stuff, I think. Right. Yeah, yeah.
But we remember the people that invested in our life. Yeah. And I think helping our small groups realize like the work that you're doing is not just the 45 minutes in this room.
Right.
The 45 minutes in this room is representation of the relationship that you've built coming out of it. Yeah. And I think a lot of times when there's distractions and often these things that are disruptive in the room, it stems from a lack of actual relationship outside of the room.
Well, so that's the thing, as we're talking through how to prepare our leaders for disciplinary stuff. We talked about it last week. It's still true this week. Most disruption comes from a lack of relationship, and that's hard to fully win inside of the 40-minute window. Like that, again, it's representational. It's an overflow of what's really going on. And so some of the work that may need to be done for your small group leaders alongside you is the relational work outside of that time. It's like small groups happening as much at the 9-square court before we start that night as it is with the phone call 2 days after just to say, thanks for coming and sharing. I'm still thinking about what you said. And I think that's the thing, again, when we're painting expectations and successes, man, you didn't win your small group because you asked better questions. You won because every Saturday before Sunday, you made 7 phone calls to see if those kids right. were going to be there. That's the win.
That's huge.
The win.
I have a very different story that I do think ties. When I was in high school myself, there was a teacher in our school that was always known for being like hard.
Okay.
Okay. Miss Taylor, like there was stories about how mean she was.
Mean old Miss Taylor?
Dude, for real. Oh. And she was a history teacher.
Of course.
And
never an English teacher, always history.
I remember I got her, you know, when you go to pick up your schedule.
Yeah.
I got her as one of my teachers, and I just remember being like, oh, no. But my very best friend was also in that class.
Okay.
And him and I were always big personalities, really charismatic, all that kind of
stuff. Super well behaved all the time. Never disrupted class.
Correct.
Ever.
So we were like, dude, she's going to kill us.
Bibles in bags.
And I remember him and me we decided, we're like, we're going to become her favorites. And
like high school psychology, Chad, of just like, oh, dude, hey, this teacher's hard. You know what we're going to do? Not ruin her life. We're going to become her favorites.
So we legitimately, we started taking our lunch to her class. Just, I mean, interrupted her life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And bro, can I am still Facebook friends with this lady today. She went from being like everybody afraid of her.
Yeah.
Everybody else was still afraid of her.
Not you.
Me and Matt, we loved that lady. Yeah. We got to know her.
Well, so I was going to ask you, what did you learn about her that really, what were the things you learned about her that really like flipped the switch? Because there's always some story that you learn about like a home thing or like her personal history that you're like, I see you so differently.
We learned and we realized you get to, we saw behind the curtains of being an adult earlier than we should have.
Okay.
Like she was not a harsh lady. She just ran her classroom in a way that was strict, that you're going to listen and you're going to pay attention and you're going to learn.
And if you don't.
If you don't, you're going to the principal's office, right?
Every time.
But... and none of that changed for us inside of our classroom. But it made all the difference when you know who she is.
Yeah.
And I think that that is some of it, is we have middle school students acting up and doing all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of it needs to be corrected.
Yeah.
But sometimes you're going to start to realize that when you really get to know the kid.
Yeah.
That home life.
Yeah.
Is in a way that he or she may never get to really talk.
So Karen and I have some family sayings. Yeah. We talked about this like before, like as a married couple, whenever we're feeling like tense about like, man, we're busy and the kids need us and work's demanding, we always will look at each other and go, same team.
Right.
Same team. Like whatever you're feeling about that direction and this direction, right. Hey, same team.
Right.
So one of the ones that we've said recently that we probably are adding to the lexicon of our family, whenever we, cause she's a teacher, she's got a lot of kids. I get to work with youth pastors and students and things, is the eureka or the aha of, I didn't know the whole story.
Right.
So it's like, you're talking about like, oh, this guy at work, like he's always late and this and that or whatever. And then like something happens where you learn, well, yeah, man, did you know that his kid's really sick and they have like 5 appointments a week, and you get to come back to your, and you're like, I didn't know the whole story.
Right.
And before you ever bite off more you can chew about any of your kiddos, I would encourage you to ask a few more questions to see if you can find out the whole story.
I want to give one more.
Yeah, one more.
Give your leaders a break.
Oh, yes.
Most of our ministries are set up for them that they indefinitely never have a time off. Think about the opportunity for a rotation, for a vacation.
Yes.
For your leaders.
Yes.
On a
rhythm. Sabbath in small groups. I like it.
When you show them that you're caring for them when ministry is hard, then they're going to be respectful of the time that they have.
That's good. That's good. Well, hey, y'all, thanks for listening to another episode of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. Whether you're watching this or listening to this, we're thankful for you. If you've got more questions like these, check out the community. We'll drop a link in below. We'd love to chat with you more.
Snap.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Youth Ministry Booster Podcast. If you want to talk about more about talking, preaching, teaching, we'd love to have you join us at the Experience Practice What You Preach 2024. It's our third year of hosting a Nashville-based preachers conference for those that communicate to youth and students. If that's you, whether you're preaching to 12 or 112 on a weekly basis, we're all gathering to learn and grow together and have a dang old good time. Check out more in the link below for the Experience, where you can hang out with Chad and I and a bunch of our friends and youth pastors like you. All right, we'll see you next time.